Do you taste it? Is it sweet or sour? Welcome to the evening event we sometimes call lecture. Is that what it says on the sign? Sometimes we call it Dharma talk. Those things involve usually some words. So let's do that. This is case number 7 in the Book of Serenity. Yao Shan ascends the seat. The ancient Chinese Zen ancestor Yao Shan ascends the teaching seat. So the introduction, poetic introduction to this story, says, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, each one has its one ability. But the eyebrows are above. And they don't do much. They just hang out up there. Some people might say, oh no, the eyebrows have the function. They protect the eyes from dust and stuff like that. But they mainly just hang out there, where the eyes, ears, nose, and tongue actively go about their day. They hang out there kind of like mirror eyebrows. They just watching the activity of these other senses. Warriors, farmers, crafters, merchants, each one returns to a job. But the unskilled one is always at leisure. The one who has no job just hangs out with the eyebrows. How does a real Zen teacher devise techniques? That's the introduction to this story of the day. So the story goes like this. Yao Shan hadn't gotten up on the teaching seat in the Zen temple for a long time. The temple administrator said to him, everybody's been wanting instruction for a long time. Please, teacher, expound the teaching for the congregation. So Yao Shan asked him to ring the bell, and when the congregation had gathered, Yao Shan ascended the seat, sat down on the teaching seat. After a while, he got right back down from the seat and returned to his room. The administrator followed after him and asked, a while ago you agreed to expound the teaching for the congregation. Why didn't you utter a single word? Yao Shan said, for the sutras, for the scriptures, there's teachers of sutras. For the shastras, the treatises, there's teachers of treatises. How can you question this old monk? Or how can you blame this old monk? That's the story. Part of the context is that Zen is said to be the separate transmission outside the scriptures and the treatises, pointing directly to the heart. enabling us to wake up and see true nature, be Buddha directly. There were other Buddhist teachers in China at this time that taught sutras and treatises. And it looks like Zen teachers also said a lot, like here's a big thick book of teachings of Zen teachers. But and Yao Shan, I guess, had been doing that too, because the administrator said, you haven't gotten up on the seat to teach for a while. You used to be into that. It's long overdue. Please tell us something. We're restless. I mean, we have lots to do in the Zen temple here, like sitting, facing the wall, doing nothing. And it is quite exciting, but still, we haven't heard a talk for a long time. We also get to, like, you know, chant sutras and stuff like that, like the Heart Sutra, over and over again. It's almost the same every day. It's also very exciting. But, every time there's a Dharma talk, it's different. So please, break up the monotony in our routine. Just say something. Do that thing. You know, it happens every Wednesday night. It's time for the lecture, the Dharma talk. Please follow the schedule, teacher. The commentary on this story says, the hungry will eat anything, the thirsty will drink anything. Therefore, at five requests from three different people, bodhisattvas enter the teaching hall, showing their whole bodies with half a verse. So, there is this ancient Buddhist tradition of being asked three times before giving a teaching. Apparently, the historical Shakyamuni Buddha, we have these records of the scriptures, right, the sutras, thousands and thousands. And I think there's something like, there were maybe like five or six out of these thousands that the Buddha like spontaneously spoke, and all the rest were like responses to being asked to give some teaching or asked a question or something. So another Zen teacher in the old days said, nowadays many people take the Dharma lightly. They just maybe expect a talk and they're not that hungry for the Dharma. He said, I would rather like to be like a farmer who lets the fields dry from time to time, make them parched and thirsty. After that, when the water is poured on, then the crops sprout. Maybe wait a long time till people really want some Dharma, and then you rain it down and everything sprouts. Yao Shan did give other teachings too. He's one of our Zen ancestors in our particular lineage. Yakusan, Igen, Daiyosho. He'd give kind of like quite elaborate, extensive instruction, such as one time he was sitting zazen, and someone asked him, "What are you doing?" what are you doing? And Yao Shan said, well, actually, I'm, you know, not doing anything at all. And the questioner said, well, then you're just idly sitting there? And Yao Shan said, if I was idly sitting there, that would be doing something. And the questioner said, well, you say you're not doing anything. What is it, actually, that you're not doing? And Yao Shan said, even 10,000 sages don't know. That's an extensive teaching about how to practice Zazen. He was quite into Zazen. Maybe that's why he didn't go up to teach for a while. He was just sitting in his room. Another time he was sitting Zazen and a monk came up and said, what are you thinking? Just sitting there so upright and still. And Yao Shan said, I'm thinking of what doesn't think. The monk said, well, how do you think of what doesn't think? And Yao Shan said, it's not a matter of thinking or non-thinking. How do you think of what doesn't think? Well, without thinking. Another long sutra discourse on how to practice. He didn't, you know, he didn't give too much. He didn't like to give extensive explanations. He thought it might confuse and distract people from the simple practice of just being themselves. It could be that he got this way because in his youth he was really into studying sutras and all the precepts and commentaries and treatises and learned them really well. And some doubt lurked in the back of his mind and thought, well, I've done all this study, but something's missing. So he went to his teacher, Sekito Kisen, and said, I've studied all these teachings, all the sutras of the Buddha and all the commentaries and so on, and but I've heard that there's this Zen teaching, pointing directly to the heart, seeing our true nature and being Buddha. Can you please help me understand this? And his teacher said, being thus won't do, actually. But also not being thus won't do either. And being neither thus nor not thus won't do at all. How about you? He did not find that helpful. So he said, well, I guess maybe my affinity is not here. This teacher leaves me nothing to understand. Let me go try another one of these Zen teachers. Because I've already done the sutra teachers thing. They've, you know, and I've understood the scriptures and the treatises. But this direct pointing seems like there's not much time left in this life, even though I'm still kind of young, he thought. So let's resolve this matter immediately. So then he went to Matsu and said the same thing. You know, I've studied all these sutras, but I heard about this direct pointing of Zen. And please, will you please instruct me in this? And Matsu said, sometimes he's made to raise his eyebrows and blink. Sometimes he's not made to raise his eyebrows and blink. Sometimes raising the eyebrows and blinking is just right. Sometimes raising the eyebrows and blinking is not quite right. How about you? But this time, young Yaoshan let go of trying to grasp the Dharma and entered directly. It was all clear. No more questions he had. He even said to Matsu at that point, thank you so much. You know, when I was with Yaoshan, he said this thing about neither thus nor not thus. I felt like a mosquito trying to bite an iron bowl. But then he went back to Sekito Kisen and practiced with him for many more years. Just, flying around that iron bowl, dancing in the cow pastures. So it's hard, you know, because anything we say misses the mark. And yet, if we don't say anything, we just swim around in our usual stories. And I think this is problem of like teaching Zen, right? It's a nasty business. It should never have started in the first place. But now that it has, we have to take care of it. Like one time, another Zen ancestor, Huangbo, also came into the teaching hall, and everybody attentively awaiting the lecture. And he said, what are you people doing here anyway? What are you looking for? If you're just like slurping the dregs of Dharma, how will you ever have today? Don't you know that in all of China, there are no teachers of Zen? And somebody came forward and said, but what about all those like temples where people get up and they have, it says lecture on the schedule and stuff like that? And he said, I don't say that there's no Zen, there's just no teachers of Zen. And yet, we can enact a kind of maybe like a ceremony that looks like it's kind of like there's something being conveyed. And there's something beautiful about that, I think. Because it's a way to be together. It's like that's the spiritual community. And in our togetherness, maybe we taste some intimacy of Buddha Dharma. Especially when we can't quite get a hold of anything. Because as soon as we feel like we got a hold of it and we got it, then we can go back to sleep so easily. Like I finally figured that one out. Now I understand that. Check it off. It said in Zen, actually, that not knowing is most intimate. The verse to celebrate this story says, a foolish child troubles over gold, paper, money used to stop crying. A good steed chases the wind, looking back at the shadow of the whip. Clouds sweep the eternal sky. Nesting in the moon, a heron. The cold clarity gets into his bones. He can't go to sleep. So this is, as they often do, these verses refer to all these earlier Dharma images. So the foolish child troubles over this gold paper money used to stop crying. This is in the Parinirvana Sutra. The Buddha talks about sometimes a skillful mother when her baby's crying and wants the baby to stop crying, she says, if you stop crying, I'll give you some gold. And the baby says, huh? And then she gives the baby some paper, gold paper. And the baby thinks it's real gold. Oh, okay, thank you. I don't need to cry anymore. So in that scripture, the Buddha is saying that's kind of like the Dharma that comes in words. It's kind of like paper gold that stops suffering beings from crying temporarily. But it's not like real gold. Right? But it's, you know, it's okay. Because because the mother's got to go to sleep at some point. So, got to put the baby to bed. But also, I think it's quite kind. Yeah. So, the verse is, a foolish child troubles and gets, worked up wanting this gold paper used to stop crying is a versifying the administrator coming to ask Yao Shan to teach some Dharma. A good steed chases the wind, looking back at the shadow of the whip. And this comes from the story, again from India in the Buddha's time. Somebody came to ask the Buddha, I don't ask about the spoken or the unspoken. Please point out the Dharma to me. I don't ask about the spoken or the unspoken. Please point it out. The world-honored one, the Buddha, remained silent. And the questioner bowed and said, the world-honored one's great compassion has opened the clouds of my illusion and allowed me to gain insight. And he left. So he said, when the Buddha didn't say anything, this person got it. And then Ananda, after he left, Ananda asked the Buddha, Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, said, what truth did that person say that he saw, see? What truth did he see that he realized something? And the Buddha said, Like a good steed, he goes as soon as he sees the shadow of the whip. In other words, like, the, you don't actually have to hit him very hard and say, like, okay, here's the whole teaching. Let me just explain the whole thing for you. There's four noble truths. There's an eightfold path. There's 37 elements of enlightenment. He just said, well, nothing. And this person saw just the shadow of the whip to spur him on in the distance. And immediately just ran. Like, you don't even need to, you don't need to strike me. The shadow's enough. So this is like the other side. These two, you know, some foolish children trouble over the money, the paper money used to stop crying. But a good steed chases the wind looking back at the shadow of the whip. They immediately get it when not hearing anything at all. Clouds sweep the eternal sky. Nesting in the moon, a heron hidden in the moonlight, a white bird blending into the moon, but distinct. You can see him, Yao Shan. It's like hidden in the moon. The moon, that he expressed by just sitting there for a bit and getting down. The Dharma moon, just radiant brightness. Silent moon. Yao Shan's, almost you can't find him in that moon. Almost can't find him because he's just the same color as the moon. And he's not giving you much to find him because he's just sitting there. And yet, he's distinct. He's Yao Shan. The cold clarity gets into his bones. He can't go back to sleep. And the commentary on the verse, one line says, but even so, his sleep talk is not little. He didn't say anything in all the story, right? But still his sleep... Well, he did say, right? He did say, for sutras, there's sutra teachers. For commentaries, there's commentary teachers. How can you doubt this old monk? That sleep talk is not little. It's a bit extra, the commentator thinks. So mostly our practice is, at least our practice in this room is mostly silent. Who knows what stories might be going on internally, but there's one Zen teacher that said, like, hanging your mouth on the wall. You come into the Zendo and face the wall, and you kind of like take your talking mouth out, and you have little hooks on the wall. Maybe we should put them here. You can hang your mouth on the wall, just let it hang there for a while. And sometimes we speak. Do you all have anything to say?
Mm-hmm. It's poignant, I think, because, you know, it sounds like he was an eager studier in his younger time. And I think it's just, you know, this is what happens. We have these different seasons of our life. And, you know, this is how it is for us. And in this room, you know, different ones of us are in different places of our lives, different times, different, you know, maybe a more talkative time or a more quiet time.
Yeah.
So I just love it. I think it's just
And it doesn't mean that that he never gave a talk again.
Right.
It could be that that the next week he's like, okay, we're gonna do a 20-week series of talks on the Avatamsaka Sutra, line by line. Ready? Ring the bell.
Yeah. But I like how he says it, how, you know, kind of like, isn't it enough? Just, you know, this whole monk.
Yeah.
Isn't that enough?
How can you question me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can you doubt that there's, you know, thinking there's something lacking here? We could say that's maybe the heart of it. Do we feel, if there's no words and nothing to get a hold of, do we feel like there's something lacking? But I really don't get it. I would just need some explanation.
One more thing. Just reminded me, I was hiking with my brother on this weekend, and he's an avid bird watcher, and he said that he used to take people out to go see owls, but he had to stop doing it because often there wouldn't be any owls. And he said that even though he'd give these big promo talks, now we might not see any, you know, they're very secretive and, you know, just be prepared. He said that they go, okay, and then they'd sit there, and inevitably, you know, if they didn't see any, be like, how come we didn't see any owls? You know, and it's like they missed the sitting in the night, in the early dawn, with your awareness. You know, they thought that nothing had happened.
I think a lot of people, use various excuses that seem like they're doing something in order to really appreciate doing nothing. Like maybe fishing is that way for people. They go fishing, they never catch anything, but it's so relaxing to sit there with your line in the water. And to take it even a step further, and in Zen, sometimes we say that Zen practice is like fishing with a straight hook. So even if finally the fish comes along and bites, it's just like it just slips right off. Yes.
And if you get one, it's a whale. maybe the story also speaks to our expectations.
Yeah.
That they have. So when the teacher is ascending the high sea, we're expecting a talk. When we get up, we're expecting the force to appear underneath our feet.
Yes.
So it's maybe a good point in time to question these expectations.
Yeah. And if we didn't have regularity, then things would be very chaotic. So I think that's Zen centers have always had regular schedules of events, and it's a very, you know, I'm the kind of person who loves regularity. It's like thrives on we just do the same thing. You don't have to think about it. That's, I think, the nice thing about regularity is like you set it all up, and then you just, as we sometimes say, follow the schedule. Living at a place like Tassajara, the monastery, where it's like the whole day is all these scheduled events, and people come and they say, well, if we want to really practice Zen, how do we, you know, give us the inside scoop? You know, is it about like great heroic effort? Is it about like not thinking at all? And the instruction is, no, just actually follow the schedule. That's all. You can do, you know, you can think whatever you want, you can whatever, but just, it's enough to follow the schedule. Of course, it's often like, the schedule is like the whole day, so there's not much room for anything else. So. But still, I think people are often disappointed when they hear, oh, just follow the schedule. But, well, that's so plain, and like, anybody can just follow the schedule. What's the real practice? So just kind of going along. And so I think it's nice that we have like weekly talks and so on. But they do create this, I don't know if we call it a problem exactly, but they create these expectations that it's going to go a certain way. We had a special sesshin retreat last summer when we had a whole, I think it was a whole text we were going to study, and the sesshin was all set up. And then right before the sesshin, Venerable Abbot Catherine had this accident, and it turned out she was dying during the sesshin. So we had a very unusual sesshin where we'd go over and sit at her house, and as she was dying, we'd sit zazen with her over there, and we'd then silently process back and sit in the zendo, and then we'd process over there again. And it was completely unexpected type of sesshin. It was like not what anyone, especially me, was counting on. So it had its own kind of magic, I think, because of that. Because it was so unexpected. We'll just have to change and adapt to these circumstances. So, expectations often, like, keep us maybe asleep in a certain way. Johnny?
So Master Basuri left the body of teachings for people he was teaching to teach. And he said that a student should sit for 7 years before hearing a sutra. And then, is that reading the Pali Canon? The Buddha is said to have said, you can certainly memorize 3,000 lines of sutra, of the teaching, but it's not as good as just embodying four.
Four lines.
Four lines.
Mm-hmm.
Just have four that you fully embody, then you will be farther along than if you recite them.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe even one.
Mm-hmm. He says that with Dhammapada, too.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what I get out of this particular thing.
Yeah.
Is that it's very much like the case where Manjushri says, here's the Buddha, and after the fanfare, the Buddha gets up and leaves.
Mm-hmm. Almost the same story,
yeah.
Which was the first case in this same book.
You know, there is something like, for me, I never picked on Manjushri for that. It's like I don't pick on Judas. Jesus. But, you know, the idea of the actual appearance of a person who's called Buddha leaving, what's left speaks more than anything you've said.
Yeah. And in that story, he never says anything. So there's a little bit of like this play of there's the Buddhas and then the Zen ancestors, and the Buddhas are just the essence, and the ancestors are like the function.
Right. And I imagine the Buddha and Manjushri had a little talk outside before the talk, and the Buddha said, "Look, I want you to make a big build up tonight, okay?" And then I got a surprise.
Yeah. So Yaoshan almost gets away with that, but then when he comes in, it's questioned. He's like, "Well, the Buddha might not say anything here at all, but like, I'm willing, as a Bodhisattva ancestor, to say something. So I'll just say this: for sutras, they're sutra teachers, and for treatises, they're treatise teachers. How could you doubt me?" Yes, Patrick.
Well, I just remember other unpredictable sesshins. 20 years ago, we would follow Catherine up to Jikoji at the top of the summit road, and it was always wet there. But frequently there was no power for, you know, many of the days of our 5-day sesshins there. And one time there was no stove to cook our food. And one time, even though there was water all around us, there was no electricity to pump the water. water, so we have no water. And Catherine would give a talk every day because it was on the schedule. And, you know, there was always a theme, a topic. But it was mainly just that this sitting really did save all beings. And so in the midst of that real thundering silence, the few words that were said just got all of us to save all beings. Those 24 for the 5 days.
Yeah, ideally words, teachings are just encouragement to just sit and practice. The teacher I practiced with in Japan was very much not into encouraging Dharma study. You really weren't supposed to read at that temple. The instruction, as I heard, was like, don't read anything, any print smaller than this. So basically it means like, if you're walking down the street and you see a street sign, that's okay. Or like a store or something, you know. Like, just very practical. So it's not like some, you know, hard and fast rule, but just anything less than this is kind of probably is unnecessary. And he would say, especially for the foreigners, of like, if you made it all the way to Japan to practice Zen, you probably already read a lot, enough to get here, and that's enough. Like, if you're that motivated to come all the way here, you've already learned all you need to know. It's a little bit like that. He didn't say these exact words, but and then the rest is it might just, you know, confuse and distract you. He did give Dharma talks though, you know, asking him one time about reading something and reading some maybe really simple kind of Zazen instructions, and he said, "Well, if the reading encourages you to sit Zazen, then that's the most appropriate kind of Dharma." So sometimes we need inspiration, and maybe that's how it was in this case of like, you haven't spoken for a while, and we're getting really bored. We need some inspiration. Some of you might know Uchiyama Roshi would do these sesshins retreats with no toys. I think Patrick maybe did. Did you do no toys sesshin with Shohaku Okamura? No toys means like there's no Dharma talks, no Dokusan, and no service, no chanting. So just sit, just sit, just sit. And I think that's, you know, Yao Shan was maybe kind of a no-toys kind of guy. Like, we don't need anything. And often we feel, I confess, I feel like, I need, like, we need to get the, you know, the Dharma juices going. We need some inspiration. I need some inspiration. But then I think it's nice to look at that, for me to check out, well, do I feel like something's actually missing? You know, what do you mean I need inspiration? What's that about, actually? So, it doesn't mean we shouldn't receive inspiration, and we shouldn't clarify the practice endlessly. And yet, just where are we coming from? Is the question. Is it more like, let's celebrate our life of practice. Dharma is an amazing thing. What a gift we've already received to be able to practice at all. And now we can just further celebrate it by continuing to, you know, bring up these ancestors and and hear how different people, often these days that's how I think of, I still, you know, I love, more than ever maybe these days, I love hearing other people talk about Dharma and studying Dharma. And it's not so much like I need to, there's something I need to get that I don't, haven't gotten yet. It's mostly like, how do human beings express this amazing truth of practice and reality in their own way? Because everybody does it differently. And it's so beautiful to hear it, all these different styles, how it's presented. It's like, you know, looking at different kinds of art or listening to different kinds of music. It's like, you get really fixated on one, but it's like, well, it's such an amazing gift that music exists in this world. Let's check out, like, all different kinds. A little bit like that. So sometimes it's like this. Lots of words. Thank you all for coming and listening and speaking and sitting and communing this evening with words and silence. We offer any positive energy arising from our practice this evening to the peace and happiness of all living beings. May they fully enjoy their lives moment to moment. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.